Mr. Robbie Thomas.
Well, folks, yes, that was, thank you, Keith, thank you. I'll pay you that $5 later. Yes, it's amazing, you know, people always want to ask me, where do you get this ability? How do you do it? Where did it all stem from? And I'll give you a quick story. I'm 3 years old, and I'm telling my mother, either I'm adopted, or I know I have a sister out there. And she'd say, Ron, he's doing it again. And my dad would say, Robbie, get in here. So this went on, and I kept hounding her. The night before she died, I had a vision, and I was visited, and they told me everything would be okay, and I couldn't move. I was in bed. I mean, I was paralyzed. We all hear about the four horsemen, and I was trying to get away, and they told me everything will be fine, not to worry. And then they showed me everything that was going to happen that day. I went over to my mother's house, like I do every day, to have tea and toast in the morning. I was a mama's boy, still am. And when I went there, she wouldn't look at me, and she was facing away from me. And then I'm still compelled, and I had this feeling like I had to tell her. So I said, I'm going to tell you something. And I told her. She turned around, and she didn't look at me. She looked through me. And she told me, go home. I'll call you in a little while. So now I'm sitting there, and I got, you ever get a little factor? Like, you know you got to go, but you got to stay. You want to stay? That's what it was. So I'm at home now, and I'm sitting with my wife and my best friend. And still get choked up. And phone rings. And it's my father. He's on the phone. About an hour and a half, babe, later. And he's screaming, it's your mother. And so we race over, and there they are. They're pulling my mother out of the house. One guy's on top of the gurney, and he's doing CPR. And the other guy's pulling him, and they take her, and she passed. And that was the hardest thing ever. So I became the most reclusive hermit, alcoholic you could think, for 2 weeks, sitting in the backyard. I called God every name in the book. I shook my fist at him, and then I started to realize, this is what he wants. He wants us to open up. And it's not the fact that I lost her, I gained an angel. And I know she's there because I asked for help. And you're gonna see today, everybody who's an angel, that I've worked murder cases and helped families and police. And I know she's beside me and she's my guide. That's where it all stemmed from. Now I'm gonna take you back a little bit more. Age 28, when she passed, I'm 43 now. We're doing a major radio broadcast. Before that, my family pulls me aside and says, you know all those years you kept hounding your mom and saying, I have a sister out there? They introduced me and my sister. And the Fox FM here in town did a major broadcast, and it made news. It was just amazing. Here I am, you know, I'm right. You know, I was right all that time. She left me a gift. And my sister was a spitting image of my mom. And it was amazing, because back in those days, before she met my father, 4 years prior to, Roman Catholic, Christian, very strict, the church took her and gave her up for adoption. It was all hush hush. And here you are. And that's where it all began, age 3 for me. So I'm taking what I get, and I used to sit there and think, is it about readings, or is it about the human condition? Because God showed me the human condition in that moment when my mom passed, and I learned the lesson that we have to talk to him all the time. We can't fool ourselves or kid ourselves in any way whatsoever. There is a higher being. And when I sat there and, you know, I'm looking at this, and which way am I going to go? 18 years ago. Who's all from Sarnia here? Okay, great. Remember Mark Campbell? That was my first murder case. Now, I seen the gentleman, and I seen black all around him, and he was walking across the parking lot going into the apartment building. And it was like I was in a distance trying to figure out what was this about. So I knew the superintendent, and I said, I got to get to know that guy. Something's up with this guy. And he says, okay, well, I'll introduce you to him. And he was a sawed-off little, everybody knows what Eddie Van Halen looks like. Well, he was about this big, long hair, looked like Eddie Van Halen. And he went by the nickname Jesse. So we're in his apartment, and I'm looking at the guy, and I'm looking right through him. And I can see everything that was going on. And just out of the blue, he gets up, runs over to me, and starts feeling me up for a wire. And I'm taken back, and he goes, you want to know? Because I kept prying into certain things. And he told me exactly what happened. They were ripping off a car stereo across the way from the gas station where 14-year-old Mark Campbell worked. Thomas Cook, who's in jail right now because he saran-wrapped his girlfriend and watched her pass away because she couldn't breathe, was part of this two-team people. They went across. Brad followed them, and they were shooting poor Mark Campbell in this little booth.
No bigger than this, right?
And they were saying, he was jumping around as we were shooting him. And he was telling me this. And so I'm visualizing everything, knowing I'm in the right place. And then he goes, get out of here. So I'm leaving his apartment. And he told me if I tell anybody, but he says, it doesn't matter. I'm going to get off in a technicality anyways. My family's going to back me up. So this is where people in town don't know where it all really stemmed from or what happened. This is what happened. I go back to the police, and I'm telling them exactly what's going on. They said, Robbie, you got to go back and wear a wire. And I said, are you kidding me? He just felt me up for a wire. And, you know, the mindset, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm telling you. And they were really desperate because at the time they were in court, and they needed evidence. So I didn't do it. They got off on a technicality, as we know, and it's a shame. So I dedicated my life to doing this and helping families and police internationally. And today, you're going to have a little look at what I call angels. And you look at these faces, and these are the faces of all these children and adults that I had the opportunity just to help. And I hope you enjoy it, and I'll speak a little bit more about each case after we watch this.
Now, Robbie, you each time that you come on, we always talk about some of the cases that you're working on with the police. And the case that was going on down here called the Baseline Killer was actually the Baseline Killers. One of them turned state's evidence and our state's witness and testified against the other. But before they were caught, you were on this show and you described for us what the police would find. And you said it's not one, it's two. It's a younger guy and an older guy, and they've already talked to them. And they will go back to them as suspects, and they're the ones that did it. And you told us some other details, and all of that within a few days, maybe a week or two, it all hit the news here. The arrest was made, and it was exactly as you had described it, and it was just amazing. Well, the trial is over now, and the chief suspect has been convicted. The other one pled guilty to a lesser charge and turned state's evidence, or state's witness. And this one has been convicted. And it was really chilling because it all played out exactly as you told us before it happened. And you do this with other law enforcement agencies all around the world. Are you working on any cases, or have you been working on any cases that you can talk about?
Yeah, I'm currently working on two at the very moment. I got 37 in total that are in my office.
Yes, that's right. We all can't be serious all the time. I'll start in reverse order and go backwards on this. Showing you what's caught on film and how they talk back. That's the emphasis of coming off of the Natalie Holloway case, when Ronald James, who shot Dead Whisper, it was Dr. Fred Bell. He was working with the United States authorities there, knew the liaison for the family, asked me to step in. Ronald was going to film everything, and we had BBC Radio. During our time with the Natalie Holloway case, I want to hang on for that for a moment and tell you what happened. We decided to film Ghosts and Legends, which turned out to be Dead Whisper. My premise was to say, does my mom hear me or my dad hear me? And so when people see this, she does hear you. She's talking because these people are talking. And I know some people just, you know, it's hard for them to fathom. But if I can put it in film form, or Michael can grab it into EVP form, it's amazing, because then, you know, we got Dave Schrader, we got Patrick Burns, and everybody who's out there trying to get the truth and filter it to us and show us this. That was the premise. Mom, do you hear me? And we went forward. Now, going to the murder cases, you've seen some very high profile cases there. Brian Jones, the founder of the Rolling Stones, I worked that case as well. I found a guy alive, as that letter you seen from the X-Zone radio show. Hamilton County, Florida. He went missing. And they had a couple other psychics saying certain things. One said he was shot and dead in a hotel, and they couldn't find the hotel. So Rob McConnell gives me a call, and he says, Rob, we need your help. And I said, okay. And he says, he's dead. And I said, who's dead? And he says, Corey. And within 10 minutes, I said, no, he's not dead, he's alive. And he's in Oklahoma. He's mad at you guys because of the fact that he passed him up for a promotion. And he laughed at me. And I've known Rob for a long time. And so he says, well, you know, we've had so-and-so, and, you know, thank you anyways. I said, okay, well, just remember, in 3 days he'll call you. And his letter states, you know, he ended up calling them in 3 days. He was alive. And that's a happy one. You know, I'm very happy for that. So off of that came Brian Jones, the founder of the Rolling Stones. I was an honor to work with award-winning screenwriter Gloria Shepherd. She was hired by the family and the detective to find more evidence, because this mystery of him drowning in the pool just didn't sit well. So we dug and dug for about a year, and we found three letters that were sealed, never opened, in his last days. Now, do you guys know Donovan Leitch? You know, we call him Mellow Yellow, right? He married Brian Jones's one girlfriend from back then, but she had a baby with Brian Jones. His name's Julian. Now, Julian was to come over and do a DNA test so they can cut it open and see his DNA matches with his dad, and then they'll read the letters. That was supposed to happen when I was on the Paige Bergfeld case, and I'm still yet to hear from that, but that's how far we got. We found the three letters, so we're moving advancement that way. Paige Bergfeld. Now, how many of you have seen Dateline? It was called Mother by Day, Hooker by Night. They were looking for her and couldn't find her, and still haven't found her. That's way up in the mountain. No one goes for a picnic, or you would never get into this area because it's so dense. So I call my date, and the producer's name is Algany. She says, Robbie, we'll fly you up there. You show us the body. And I said, I don't work like that. You know, I don't do that. And she says, come on, come on. And so She got a hold of Sergeant Cliff Christ. He explained a little bit how we found it. And then she said, well, how did he get the name of the individual? And he let it out that I gave the name of the man who was actually... He posed as a mechanic, dressed up, went over to his job, applied for a job. The guy got spooked. So now Sergeant Cliff Christ jumps into his car, takes off, and this guy decides to get in his SUV and follow him. And now it's snow. There's a lot of snow in Colorado. Went down the highway. He's on the phone. He's going, Rob, the guy's following me. I said, well, take him down the road towards that area. See if we can get him to, like, flush him below, right? See if we can get anything from this guy to see what he does. So he went down as far as he could, turned a U-turn, and Michael pulled over to the road. Now, the next morning, up in that area, no one goes there. Like, nobody goes there. He went back to the road. Sure enough, there was one set of tire tracks and one set of footprints that went only so far, stopped, as if you were facing in one way, looking to see if the body was gone. And that was the area that they were searching. They didn't search further enough, and that's where we found the top. Now, we all know animals scurry bones and body parts for hundreds of miles, when something like that. So that's still on the go right now for that. So that's another case I was involved in. Natalie Holloway, that was a case. Getting back to that, they recorded everything. They have all the archives. Donald Newsom's hanging on to them in 2006. I said, he's going to come forward. He's going to be caught on film speaking, and it's an actual confession, if you will, and we'll have him on film 2 years later. Well, 2020 just had him on there. We've seen him, he's in the car, he's saying that, you know, he was with her, and I said, it was drugs. She was on drugs, alcohol, she slipped and fell, she hit her head, it's not murder. He just went a little bit too far, got his father involved, and that's how him being a judge and everything like that. Could you imagine the premise of the law that would go against somebody if you're hiding a body and trying to dispose of it? And that's what happened. And you see him on TV 2 years later saying all this. And it was just amazing. So he has that. It's all date stamped and it's all there and it's real. We got pulled off because everybody and their grandmother was combing the island and their economy was going right down. So the authorities said, please don't get on the planes. Don't come over here. We'll detain you. So Ronald didn't want to do it, and Donald didn't want to do it, so they just disbanded it, and that's when we did Dead Whisper. Dave Schrader calls me up. He says, look it, I got the police, I got people working on these cases, I'm going to give you 5 cases, and I want you to do a live show, October 18th, 2008, just 2 months before they found Kaylee Anthony. He says, we are going to give the information to them. Either the police will come on and ask you questions specifically, or I'll ask them for them and pass them the information. I said, okay, fine. Kaylee Anthony was one of the cases. Logan Tucker, and there's a couple other ones there. And when it comes to children, I get choked up. And so Kaylee Anthony, I'm talking about water being right off the street. The fence was so far, and I got the number and a half. It was less than half a mile from home. And I was like, okay, maybe it's time. It wasn't. When they found her body, that area was underwater, and when you see the pictures, it shows where the fence only went so far, and there's a bush line right off the road, and that's where they found Kaylee Anthony. Okay, so people can say stuff like that. And then I said on the show, but what's remarkable, so she's going to make an entry into her diary, and it's going to be today's or yesterday's here, but it's going to be the next page where you put today. Didn't they get that? And they're going through her diary, and they said the brother's involved. So then they were going after the brother, hiding information and what have you. So it was just how it played out. It was amazing to see that on. It's in archive. You can listen to the show, and like he says, he's got his archives. It's all there. Jacob Wetter, can't get over the police. And I said, it's Isaacs or Sykes, something like this. And film footage. Well, then he emails me a newspaper clipping right after the show. It was about 2 weeks later. He says the police looked at that, Rob, and said, no, they're not going to go with it. But the man they had in prison that they got, his name was Sykes. Of Jacob, in part, and I'm thinking to myself, this, you know, the police, what are they doing? You know, it just doesn't add up. And yet, they expanded that case, and all the evidence was there, and it struck me weird.
And then goes, you know, it's amazing because
the evidence that was given, and they went to his home, and they found all this, he was guilty. He's guilty, and he got his just. He's dead, so he's meeting his maker. You know, and it's amazing. Like he says, that one case in Kentucky, Little Caesar Ivan Cano. It was June 30th, just before Canada Day, and I get this phone call from Frances Etney, beautiful lady in Kentucky. She says to me, "We need your help. Little boy's gone missing, 4-year-old little Caesar Ivan Cano. Can you help?" And I said, "Well, I'm busy, I got people in the backyard," and you know, I never say no, but it was really weird how I did that. And I said, "Yeah," and I walked out, and my wife goes, "No, you gotta go help her and get back in there." So I did. I call her back up, they sent me a picture. All I had was a picture. And I sat there for about an hour and a half, and I'm channeling this little boy. And he's giving me information, and I'm doing automatic hand drawing of a 4-year-old mindset. And I said, "Tell me." And he goes, "Stadium lights off." And I draw the circles, as you see in the picture there. I was drawing the circles, and like off, not far away. And then I started thinking, okay, give me more. And he gives me Cecil. So I draw a picture as I'm doing this too, like all over this map. And I draw this man in the mindset of a 4-year-old boy. I put Cecil up top, the arrow down. And then I said, okay, give me more. Repeat offender, 2 boys. So I'm writing down 2 boys, repeat offender. And I'm getting all this information. I said, give me more. John. And I put it by the stadium lights. So I'll review this evidence now. Well, Papa John Stadium, if you stood on the murderer's front porch, right through the clearing, was right there. When I said construction, men in orange, and flags, well, in front of the murderer's home, there was flags, those flags you put in the ground, and they were doing construction right there. When I said, "Give me a second name," and I'm giving information, and I can hear, like it's like I'm talking to you, and I heard, "Eugene." Well, with a Kentucky accent, am I not right? My friend falling asleep at the chair? Yeah, long night last night, that's good. Can't be serious all the time. No, when I was just saying, when you have the accent, the Kentucky accent, that's what I heard. And so I thought, Juan. So I took it and I reversed the letter and I put Juan. The man's middle name was Eugene. I didn't miss it. His first name was Cecil. Second name's Eugene. I thought, you know, Eugene, right? That's what I heard. And repeat offender, yes, he was a repeat offender of 2 boys. Right where he was. And then I couldn't understand why I was seeing post. I didn't understand it, and you know, and I'm thinking, no, I'm channeling you now, and then everything went dead. I mean, I just lost it, and oh my gosh, so I'm frantic in the office, and I'm running around, and I'm doing what I could do. And I'm sitting down, I'm getting mad, and I get back to it. And I see puppy dogs, or dogs, right? Cadaver dogs. And I write that down. And I said, I see a vehicle, white, but dark inside. Kentucky garbage trucks are. They're white, aren't they? And it was dark inside. And that's where he was. And my take when I put on my website, robbythomas.net, it's all there with the letters and everything. When we took all that, we faxed that to the police, Detective James Bland and Major Green. We're using that evidence quickly. But it's hard when you have stipulation in law that only allows you to go so far. And it's maddening. So when they got all that, and I get Christopher 2X calls my house. He was the activist on the case for the family working with the police. He's going, they're working it, Rob. They're working, using all the information. I'm back and forth with Francis, and Francis is taking the letters, and she's CCing them to ABC, CBS, so that there's backup, you know, in the police, because that's where I work. So it shows that I did do this, and that, you know, no one's going to say, you know, it didn't work, and, you know, who's to blame? There's no one to blame. It's, there's your evidence, you know, work with it. And it was amazing, and to sit back and get the call. They found his body, garbage, and just a little ways down from the murderer's home. We caught him December 6th. He went on the lam. He ran. We caught him. He's on death row. Absolutely. You can clap on that one. Definitely. You know, it just never ceases to amaze me what people do in this life, and, you know, what they value. And I value children, everybody's life. Judy Huzentrout, anchor woman. Remember that? She went missing. The anchor woman, the blonde, went missing. Again, I'm on the show, and the officer comes on Dave Schrader's show, and I'm telling him, you know, it's two guys. And he goes, the public didn't know that. And we're off air, and we're coming back on, and then he just says, oh my gosh, you know, that's amazing, because he hit everything. And we are looking at the two guys. We do have the two suspects. I gave him the name of the one, and I gave him an initial of the other. And she's still missing. They're looking for her. I gave the bridge number in between another bridge number, so we're looking for her. You know, again, looking at life in its perspective of everybody, in working cases like this, it just, you don't see this, and you don't get the behind scenes of what goes on. So it's just, you know, here you are, and it just, it's striking for me to come out and talk about it. Karen Coughlin, Sarnia, right? Then I get a phone call from Jack Poirier, the Sarnia Observer. Robbie, we want you to give us a hand. So the family comes over to my house. I got the Observer there. And I'm telling them information. And I give them drawings. And I said, there's two murder scenes, just not the one where they found her body. And I draw Crawls Park, which is just out by Petrolia. The little hot dog hut, and the way it was, the roof was, and the door, and what have you. And that's what they were looking for, stuff like that. It was two scenes. And I give the names. And it was funny because she was feeding me names, even the family members and things that they're doing. So it was like validation and needing to know if this was real or not. So I was getting, you know, different things on the family members, which was validated. I don't want to get into it because it's personal for them. But then I give them all that evidence, and you see the clipping. And I said in the paper, we can get these guys within 6 months. They left my house. My last thing I said was, please give that information to the police. They didn't. Detective Voracek has been in touch with me, and I still have it. I recorded everything for them, so I have it all recorded, and I'm waiting for him to come down and take a look at it. Now, here's the funny thing. I'm in my house, stove breaks down. We have the brick guy comes over. He goes, my girlfriend, she's out in the cold. I said, sure, come on in. You know, and he's fixing the stove, and she sees the office on the side, and she sees all the news clippings and everything, and she goes in, and she makes a beeline for Karen Coughlin's case. And she's sitting there like this, And she goes, "Oh, I know who did that." And I just looked at her and I sat down. I just couldn't believe what she just said. And she goes, "It's so and so and so." And they went home covered in blood. And the father, who hid them from this, said, "Take your clothes off." And right now at that point, my jaw is on the floor, because that's what I was telling them back in 2005. And I'm sitting there and going, "Well, did you call cops?" He goes, "He wants to turn his son in. He's at an age where he's going to pass, but he's fearful of his son." Some of this information got to them. And the update that I know so far is they have evidence and they're close. So we're going to see some resolve in this case. I just wish it was then rather than now. It's taken so long for this family. They're so busted up. The father's passed away. The mom's passed away. There was no justice for them. But there will be. There will be. Victoria Stafford. Everybody know that case? That one really hits home. When I talked to Rebecca and Doreen and Grandma, and I went down, I sat with Detective Beth Brown, and I give them my drawings and my profiling. My profiling was of two people, man, woman. Her mental state, what she looked like, right down to drugs, everything, and what he did for a job, what he looked like, facial hair, everything. And they said, "Rob, there's only a woman on here. We got the film footage." And I said, "Okay." So we sat in office, and when you guys were seeing it on TV, it was just film footage. But I said, "Let's blow it up or put a white spot on it and enlighten it." Being a film producer, you know, tell them, help them out. So they did, and they still couldn't see her face. And then I said, "You know what? I need more." Rebecca, she goes, "Well, I'll take you to Tori's mom's home." They planted me in the house. "Who's this?" "This is Rob. Rob, a family friend." And I got that. I said, "She's connected, and you know, she's tied to this." And I couldn't put my finger on it. I was thinking, "Oh my gosh, you know, she's tied to this." Well, when they did that composite sketch of that woman and they showed her right away, she knew the name of the person like that. That woman was in her house. She only lived with that guy a few houses down from the father. My drawings of the tree line, the house that was off to the right, and a bunch of wagon wheels. And I couldn't understand what the wagon wheels meant. And I just seen them all, and she goes, "Well, just," I said, "Okay, fine, I'm gonna make a fence and put a wagon wheel. Remember, there's a lot of wagon wheels." She goes, "Yeah." I said, "And there's a lane. There's a lane there. And pile of rocks." Couldn't picture why a huge pile of rocks. So I put it by the house. But no, the pile of rocks where they found Tori was by the lane, by the trees, tree line. I said, "Dumpster, recycle bin." And that was on the news. They found that. They taped it off and took it. And I'm sitting there and I'm going over my drawings and what have you, looking at the wagon wheels and whatever. And then it came on the news. It was a Mennonite village. And then at this point, I'm so emotionally tied to the family. She invited me to her wedding, Rebecca's, her wedding. And you know, when I get tied to people, it's just that emotional thing. And I wish I could break that. And that way there I could do better for, you know, it's a job thing. That's what, you know, I got to put it here. It's a job thing. And it's very hard to discern that when you become tied to people and you love them. I love all people. And then the news started coming, and I'm sitting there, and my wife's in bed, and I'm going, "Tori, you gotta give me a sign. I need something, please." There was five little knuckle knocks on the wall. And she goes, "What the hell is that?" I said, "It's her. That's her telling me I'm on track." And I said, "Please, give me another sign. I need some sign." Again, and because I'm really communicating with her, she shows me a stuffed fox head on a hat that a woman's wearing. So I draw it. Got my sketch. I should have brought my sketches. You see them. I draw it. And then I call Rebecca and Doreen, grandma, the next day. And I'm saying, I don't know why, but, and I faxed them all my drawings. They have them all. I said, I don't know why, but I see a stuffed fox head on a hat, but I didn't mention a woman. And all of a sudden you hear a gasp, and she goes, oh my gosh, she just bought that hat yesterday. It was Rodney's girlfriend, just to let him, to let me know, because I'm working for the family, I was on the right track, I needed the sign. I wasn't doubting myself. I wasn't getting any more. I wasn't getting any more information. And they kept calling me, Rob, you got any more? I said, no, I ain't getting it. I just ain't getting it because I think I'm done. I think that's all the information that I have. Well, Rodney decides to put the hat on the very next day for Media Blitz, where they were doing the media thing. And there it was, a fox head, Fox Racing, on a hat. They said it was just a fox head on a hat. She bought that hat a day before, and Tori was showing me that. So I was on track, and there was no more information. I had people calling my house. You know, I'm not downing anybody. You know, certain psychics call me and say, just, you know, they wanted to pump me for information. And I said, it's the dump. She's in the dump. But the drawings told exactly where she was. It was a tree line. I'm watching TV. And my wife's in the chair over there. I'm watching TV. And all of a sudden, ooh, there she was. She come right at me. And she grabbed me. And she hugged me. And I'm sitting in the chair. And tears. And I'm telling her. I said, oh my gosh, she was just here. She just hugged me. And that was to show it was okay. There is no more to go. And I always argue with her, my wife. You know, is she says to me, you're not meant to be the detective. You're not meant to be the one to go beyond the scope of, you know, going out there and actually getting her. You've done your job. And I just feel like, you know, there's more because there should be more. And that's the dilemma I have. When we have all these beautiful faces that are on here, when you do murder cases. And that's the Victoria Stafford case. Beautiful. Beautiful people, that family. And, you know, it's just, again, it's striking. And I don't want to bring everybody down, but I know you guys want to know the insides of how it works with the police and family. Alicia McMaster, Burlington, Ontario. That beautiful little blonde girl. Her mom calls me up and says, can you help me? Back September of last year. I said, well, I'm busy, but I get to everybody I can. And so here we are. We looked at some evidence, and they said, the police said, oh, it's a suicide. And I wouldn't buy it. And I said, no, it's not. How can you have a suicide 40 feet from the police station, being hung on a swing? She's a petite little girl, 22-year-old little girl. She had so much alcohol and drugs in her body. I mean, I have a hard enough time climbing the pole of a swing to grab the chain, wrap it around my neck with one hand, sober. How can she do it? All her effects were strewn all around the park. I said, no, let's go back to the coroner's reports. I said, there's something on her head, and there's two marks. She goes, yeah, there is. There's a mark on her head. They said that's remarkable, but that's all they said. And I said, it's got to do with her boyfriend and another guy who lives outside the city, but he lives really close. And she's going, yes, yes. 15 minutes after she was found dead. Stevie lives right in Burlington, by the way. He's on Facebook, and he goes, I'm finally single. Mom was smart. She copied everything from that moment on all the way through, and we got that all as evidence. He's talking about killing this and doing that, and it's just on and on. We have been able to get Mom to talk to the ethics committee, the chief of police, They know I'm involved now, and they're reopening the case. And I'm going after these guys. Going after these guys, I'm gonna put them away. Yeah, nobody deserves that whatsoever. You know, it's, again, it's amazing. People just, you know, striking to me. But yes, Mom, do you hear me? Absolutely. I thank you guys. Thank you so much. If you have any questions whatsoever, I'll answer some questions for you. Yes.
Now you said your information comes from your guides.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever from the victim?
Yes.
Because I also drained her a lot of times. Like once you cross over, it's not important to them.
Right.
A lot of times,
yeah.
So.
On the other side, it's beautiful. There's no pain. There's no hate. There's nothing like that.
Have you been asked to work on the Lois Hanna case?
Lois Hanna? No. 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 Someone asked me about the Morag Davies case in here, right? Yeah. No, I would work on any case. Any
okay,
case.
Now, because I mentioned it to you, did you want to rescue mediums?
Mm-hmm.
They did an episode on it.
Right.
And asking for some information, like not, but doing with that for my daughter. So they give it to the police. The police did call me, but I never got any feedback.
When right.
Was the attitude sort of felt from that particular gentleman?
Right. I've been in office where I've seen stuff come faxed in, phone calls, and I've seen their attitude. They go, just another one, you know, and they file it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a couple of examples. Paige Bergfeld, for a whole year and a bit, mother by day, hooker by night, had a psychic lead the police. And expenditures like unbelievable, never found anything, never got anywhere, family, you know, disheartened and what have you. I can see their point. Everything that comes in, if it's valid and it means something to them and they're looking at it and you say something and it pertains to the case, they're gonna follow that lead. If it's something way out in left field, that's where they go, just another one.
Yeah. Unless they can see where it pertains.
Right.
But sometimes it may, they're looking over here when they should be looking over here.
Right.
Do they not, how serious, because you're reputable, right?
It took a long time.
So for somebody like me to say, okay, Lois has been visiting.
Right, right, right.
It's like, I mean, Christine.
I know, and it's
you
like.
Know, Christine,
right.
Contact me.
Right. And they haven't followed up.
The detective said okay, but I never heard anything back.
Right. Yeah,
does
it's.
The family have to approach you?
Yeah, I get approached by family
no,
and police.
In order for you to act on it.
Yes.
It has to be a family member.
Family member, immediate. I've had friends say, you know, okay. My friend of a friend, can you jump on the case? Well, there's legality reasons and certain things, you know, you just don't jump to. The family of Jennifer Landry approached me. They say, she was found dead. Can you help? I said, okay. Well, you talk to the police in Maryland, and I'll see if they're responsive. So Detective Morissette says, I work with psychics. And they say, who is it? He says, well, it's Robbie. I was on Spook TV commercial on Sci-Fi. He's seen it. So he said, yeah, I'll work with him. So I get the composite sketch, but that's how it works. And just thankful that somebody thought, okay, well, I'll work with him, you know? I'm not saying I'm reputable, but I mean, or what you're saying, I just said, you know, thank God the man sat there for a moment and just said, okay, I'll work with him, give him a shot. We went through the last name on her cell phone, the composite sketch of the guy. He's already in jail for trying to kill a 14 to 13-year-old after her. And the name, whereabouts and evidence where they could find it. So when Detective Morissette wrote back and I said, you know, she's got a tattoo here, and this is the tattoo. He calls me back immediately, because usually they don't, like you say, they never call you back. And he goes to me, how much information did the family give you? I said, they give me nothing. I got a picture of a beautiful girl. That's all I had. And he was just taken back, because he wanted to know, well, they're giving me stuff, because you could never come up with stuff like this. So that's what I'm saying, if it pertains to the and you hit it dead on, they'll look at the lead, and that's what happens. Yeah. So if you have information and you did speak to them, I hope someday he will contact you. Absolutely. Yes.
The more Ryan Davies case has bothered me since the day she died. Mm. And of course, Mark Campbell, now I know more about that. Mm. What happened to him? And, you know, being born and raised in Sarnia, we don't get that many murders. What the heck? Why weren't they, you know, solved? Where does more Ryan Davies case stand right now? It's a lot of years.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, that's one that I've always wanted to, and if I was brought on to it, I would. I'm not gonna lie, I do know the man's name. And when I said that to a certain individual that was working, he was like, how'd you know? And that's where,
that's all
I ran up.
Do you ever get information about that nobody's contacted you, but do you ever get a guy or somebody coming to you with information about something, like a murder, let's say? Like,
yep. I was to be on a television show called Psychic Task Force out of Australia, and it was supposed to be Deborah Weber from Sensing Murder, Scott Russell Hill from Sensing Murder Australia, she was from New Zealand, Australia, and Anthony Grzelka, endorsed by Van Praagh. When the program came to, and we were about to do it, John Victor Ramsey's, was in Perth, Australia at the time, and I woke up and I'm watching this information that's been given to me. It's like a TV show. And I got the two names of the individuals who were involved. They asked back 43 years ago, and a place where it happened that was only known to the locals. You Google it, you'll never get the name. It was only known to the locals, like a slang word would be. But it went by Wanda Beach, the Wanda Beach murders. The mother, a week prior to, put in the paper, she's getting old, and she's getting up there, she's sick, and she's going to die. And she wants resolve. Well, her plea went out, and it's the energy she sent out. It was in the paper, and this thing happened. I called John. I'm telling him, like you say, you know, did it just come? And I said, this is how it happened. He approached the police. They thought I broke in their data bank. They did, because how would I get the two names that were the people that they first looked at back in 43 years ago, and the name and the certain aspects of everything? And so that got blown off really quick. They won't use psychics in Australia because of the fact that one time a psychic said that a man was, when the Queen was going over to visit, she said this certain individual was going to kill her, assassinate her. Well, they held the man, detained him, found out to be, wasn't credible, and he ended up suing the police. And so that's where they go. They will not use so. It's amazing. But yeah, that's how it came to that way. Any other questions? Sorry.
What's the turning point in your life deciding what was on the way to
That's a good question. I'm laughing at my answer, not your question. That was a good. I'm 3 years old, and I'm laying on the ground, and I'm watching my mom do laundry, 3 or 4 years old, and looking up at the clouds, and I go, I wonder when they're coming back, Mom. And she goes, what do you mean, the angels? And I said, no, the other people. And I knew then, when I was talking about aliens and other planets and different life forms and stuff. And it's amazing, that question, because I look at that. There was two children on Kathleen Street. There was, and I hope some Sarnia folk can remember this. On Kathleen, the townhouses, there was an explosion. And there was two children in the basement, and they died from this. And this goes back 40 years ago. Does anybody remember that at all? No? I wrote about it in my book. I'm hoping that the mother would ever, you know, hear me or read the book, that she'd see the story. I'm walking outside the townhouse, I'm 15 feet, if that, away. They tipped over a gas can in the basement, hit the pilot light, and boom. And I remember seeing glow all around me. The door was blown off, the windows were all smashed out, the brick was like pushed out. And the mother, I remember her getting up, and I hear her screaming and the smoke just bellowing out. She gets to the door and she stops screaming, she's staring at me. And I know she's seen what I seen, was the glow around me. And my mom come flying out over to me. I didn't have a scratch on me. I remember staring there, looking at the puppy and the rope, and the fire was going up the rope. And I said, please break, please break. And it broke, and the dog takes off. But I remember looking straight in that window, and I seen them go. And that was a turning point through age 3 and 4. And, you know, it's amazing you ask that question, because I don't get very often to tell that. And it was just amazing, you know. So I wrote about those two beautiful children, and one day I hope that if her mother got the book, you know, she would read it, and it's for them. Yeah.
That's a good question.
Is that why you went public? No, when I went public, no, it was a turning point. But when I went public, 18 years ago, Mark Campbell, right, and being felt up for a wire, and just looking at the evil of this guy, and the way he turned and looked at me, and he's going, you know, all right, I'll tell you, you know, you're feeling me up for a wire, and I'll kill you. And I'm looking at this guy, like, the audacity, and he didn't care. He didn't care that this poor boy was in this little cubicle making, what, $2 an hour back then or something like that, and they just wanted to shoot him. You know, it was malice. And right then I knew, I want to put every creep I can in jail, and I'll work on any case I will, and I'll do it. And I ain't afraid of nothing. One person asked me in a show, aren't you afraid they'll come and get you, or you know, people out there? And my answer was, oh, they should be afraid of me coming after them.